When you're looking at the length that your tenants have been there, it's a little different than residential properties. Everybody's on shorter term leases, but it doesn't affect the value as much. In an industrial property, the fact that they've been there means something because it's hard to move manufacturing facilities and can be expensive for businesses to move.
Welcome to Surgeon Syndicate. If you're paying attention, you know that you only make money when you work. It might be great money, but it's dependent on you. The information on this podcast will help you solve that. We interview experts and provide analysis into financial freedom through commercial real estate. Why? To help physicians like you thrive. Let's dive in.
Welcome to Surgeon Syndicate. This is your host, Dr. Michael McManus. And today we're going to be talking about why syndicators, why operators walk away from deals. So the first deal I'm going to share with you is a deal with one of our partners that we were about to join in a partnership on a strip center down in Georgia. It was really, by the initial look at it, it was a pretty good deal. The city wanted to see this retail center turned around. And so going forward, it looked like it was going to be really good and have some good returns. But going into it, this is kind of like one of the things that throws out that'll make more sense to you than anybody's ever bought a house, because a lot of it came down to the inspection. Because on the initial inspection, the building looked good, but the biggest concern was the roof. And often, even when you have triple net leases or near triple net leases, the roof is one of the things that typically comes down to the owner. And big flat roofs on a large space like this are very expensive repairs. So in this deal, just on the initial inspection, without getting a full quote on it, it was going to be at least $300,000 and maybe double that to fix the roof. And when you take a project like this and you throw in that kind of an upfront maintenance cost, it can throw off the entire dynamics. Now, initially, we thought this might be overcomable if we could get a little bit of money back from the seller, but this is where things get tricky and it depends on the seller. And there's a few more lessons here, but the financing on the deal also went sideways. And it was really because the lender, the partner was using, was somebody who operated in this area in the Southeast. And on initial discussions, there was not an issue, but it turned out when it went for higher up underwriting, they just said no because they didn't want to be operating in Georgia. Although they operate in that region, they didn't want to go into Georgia. So again, was something that probably could have been overcome. At this point, sometimes I've seen two deals recently die because the lenders backed out. And these were deals that were cash flowing from day one. And we're going to pay investors out at plus 10% returns on early cash flows, but lenders have gotten a little skittish here. And some of this is due to the action of the feds, where the Fed is doing things actively try and decrease lending. Decreasing lending decreases transactions, can help hold prices down and decrease inflation. So then the financing was the second part, maybe could have been overcome, but then it really came down to a seller who was difficult. Seller previously indicated they had some other renters who were interested. And they were going to turn over those names, and that would help fill out this value add retail center that wasn't completely rented. And adding these new leases is actually a big part of where the value add was that was going to bring the greatest returns for the investors. But about the same time that they started pushing to get a little money back because of the expense of the roof, those leads for new renters, those also went away, and that vaporized. All of these things in the right market might have all been able to be overcome. Or if the deal had enough meat on the bone, that there was really just a lot there for returns. So this started out as a good deal, not an amazing over the top deal, but a good solid deal. But which each one of these, it was another little chink in the arm there. And then the biggest thing is this was a smaller market. And we'll talk about that smaller market. That kind of put the nail in the coffin for this deal and can happen with other deals too. So I had a deal of my own recently. This one was more in the Midwest, but was in a smaller market. And we got to a price on the retail center that actually was, if this was in a more major metro area, we would have gone ahead and finished off this deal, except because it's in a smaller market, is what happens is you don't have as many buyers. And this kind of creates that we became not a buyer too, but it's when you have a lot of buyers, you know you can get out of a deal. So a lot of deals, if you're talking about Class A deals in hot markets, those deals can be hard to get into, but easy to get out of because there's lots of buyers. But when you get into secondary markets and tertiary markets, depending on the market, and they're not all the same, kind of depends how remote they are. Those are deals that are easy to get into, and you can get in at numbers that seem really good initially. But the hard part is those deals can be hard to get out of, that there aren't as many buyers, they can be harder to sell. And so you have to go into buying those knowing that you may own this for 10 years. Now, if you own this privately and you like the returns and you say, hey, I can own this for 10 years and it'll spit off cash for 10 years and that'll make me happy. If you're bringing in investors and you're looking at a 3-year, a 5-year, a 7-year time horizon, and we tell all of us, sometimes these deals drag out and they might be a 10-year deal. And that people tend to be more okay with if it's a really good deal and it's spitting off cash. But this deal, again, it was a good deal, but it wasn't a great deal. But by being in the location it was at, would make it harder to deal with things if we had problems with the deal, and harder to get out of the deal and return capital back to investors. So the other part that we might have gotten this done, but the owner still wanted to sell this deal at a price that was a little more commensurate with the bigger market. And this, in both of these stories, the seller is somebody who'd owned these for a very long time. And so they'd already made their money kind of on these deals. And so they didn't have to get out of them, but they didn't also have to stay in them. But we've seen this a lot with sellers right now, is people saw numbers of what their properties were worth back when interest rates were really low. But then when interest rates jumped up, what you can buy and finance a property for and make it cash flow effectively totally changed. And this is the same as a lot of people with their homes. 3 years ago, you were looking at a valuation on your home that looked really incredible. And then interest rates went up. And depending where you are and the market drivers where you're at, you may not be able to get that same number anymore. Now, in some markets, prices have continued to go up, or in a market, or depending on how many buyers there are. But it's kind of the same dynamics. I had sellers who weren't willing to come down to a price where this investment property could cash flow appropriately. Both of those, we had to walk away from the deal. So what other things can take down a deal? Another one recently, this was one we weren't going to be involved in, but I was approached by some multifamily operators who were looking to diversify, and they were going to buy an industrial building. And this was a nice industrial building. I believe it was in Pennsylvania. It was, again, it was in a smaller market, but it wasn't far major markets. And it was mostly leased out and had some great tenants who had been there for a long time. So when they originally looked at it, it looked like a very stabilized building because the tenants had been there for a long time. So they were going to pay a higher price because it was a stabilized building. But when you're looking at the length that your tenants have been there, it's a little different than residential property. So residential, even if everybody's on shorter term leases, if you don't get a lot of turnover, that's a good thing for a unit, but it doesn't affect the value as much. Where in an industrial property, the fact that they've been there means something, because it's hard to move manufacturing facilities and can be expensive for businesses to move. But if they're not locked into that lease, they might move. And so the difference between somebody who's on a lease that goes year to year and they can get out of any time, even if they've been there for 20 years, versus the value of a lease that they're on a 10-year lease with corporate guarantees or very good personal guarantees. When you go to sell a building, the building that has the longer term leases is worth more. And that's actually a play that some people do, is they buy buildings with expiring leases and then release it to somebody else, or release it to the same tenants if they know that they can get it leased up. But on this deal, at first they were really excited and were willing to accept lower returns, because they felt they'd been long-term tenants. But when they dug into the leases, they found that they'd had some longer-term leases a long time ago, but the owner had never actually renewed the leases. They were just rolling on the language of their last extension, which was about 10 years earlier. What does that mean? Well, it meant that they were still getting some percentage rent escalations, which is good. They'd kept working there, they'd kept paying rent, but they weren't actually under a lease. Now, this is one of these things that maybe ended up in court. You could impose upon that there had been something that had been insinuated. I'm not a lawyer and I don't like sorting things out that way. I'd much rather just have a lease that really describes what we're locked into. And if we're buying it under the understanding that this tenant will be there for another 10 years, I want to see a lease that gives another 10 years. So again, once they started to understand this about their leases, it wasn't such a great deal. And so there's a really a key thing with commercial properties versus multifamily or residential is longer leases make the building worth more money. And longer leases that have good guarantees, either guarantees from owners who have a very strong balance sheet will drive it up versus there's a guarantee from an owner who, if beyond their business, doesn't have a great balance sheet. Or even better is if you have corporate guaranteed leases. And this is one of the things that makes buildings with Starbucks in them go for a much higher price. Because even if Starbucks closes that, if they've got a 10-year lease with a corporate guarantee, they will keep paying that.
We'll get back to our show in a minute, but first I want to offer you an opportunity to accelerate your learning. My life changed and my ability to start becoming work optional changed when I gained the people and the knowledge to start investing in commercial real estate. One of the key people there was Ash Patel and joining his Invest Beyond Multifamily Mastermind. With that, I had the people and the knowledge. Well, that mastermind is no longer open, but for a fraction of the price, Ash has now made a course. And this is probably the most valuable set of information, the quickest way to move along your learning curve. So if you are interested in actively investing in commercial real estate and retail and industrial and office, I would recommend this course to you. We're going to include a pre-sale link both in the show notes. It'll also be on the surgeonsyndicate.com website. And in your checkout, we'll save you another 1%. I know it's not a lot, but every little bit helps if you use the discount code MIKE1487. So take that step now and move your future forward. If you're not interested in investing actively, give us a call here at Fortress Capital. And let's talk about what your goals are as a passive investor. But it's time to stop listening, start acting, and let's move your future forward.
The key thing there, and this is an important thing to understand when you're looking at leases or you're looking at investing in a business, that part of the value is based upon leases. Sometimes it'll turn against you with the better corporate guarantees because some of these bigger companies, they won't just walk away from a lease because they can't do that. But oftentimes buried deep in the lease, there will be language that gives them leverage to get out of that lease that you don't see that often. So again, it's a key thing to know what's in the lease and who's reviewed the leases, because reviewing your corporate leases is an important thing because it has a huge thing to do with the value of the building. Now, in multifamily buildings, the same thing happens as they go back and they review the leases, because a lot of the time in older buildings, you may have tenants, again, who haven't signed a lease for years because they've just been continuing on the old lease. So you need to know, and buyers should be doing an audit of the existing leases. Now, the difference with multifamily is, one, they tend to have a lot more leases to review. If you've got a unit building or a 100-unit building, they've got to go through all 100 leases. But the difference is, in residential, there are a lot more rules everywhere. The rules differ between city to city and state to state, but there are a lot more rules about what can be in the lease. So what you're looking for in the lease in those situations is not as complex and not quite as crucial. It's more just whether they're under the lease, what the price is, and understanding all those things, because sometimes in a building, the leases haven't been kept up to date. But when you get into a corporate or a commercial lease and a longer term lease, it's how, not just that they have a lease, how long that lease is still in effect, and who's guaranteeing the lease to make sure that it gets paid. So what are some of the other deal killers I've seen recently? Now, is environmental reviews. I know we've talked about this a little bit on the show before, but when you get into an industrial building, it could be a retail building, especially if there had been a dry cleaner there. Is there any sort of environmental contamination? And this contamination may be in from things that the average person won't see, but if there's been a previous mechanic there, they can tend to have some spills depending on how clean they kept their building. This is where dry cleaning has been processed is notorious and can be very difficult to get a completely, let's say, clean bill of health for the building that allows any types and kinds of other merchants to be leased out to. And the point there being is, if you have a building that was a dry cleaner and you buy it and then you put another dry cleaner in there, that's not going to be such a big issue. But if you can't get the environmental assessments or the environmental valuations clean bill of health, you're not going to put a pizza joint in there or even an industrial building that's had manufacturing in it, depending what's in it. Well, you hear these referred to as environmental site assessments or ESA, or you may just hear them called a phase one and a phase two. So phase one, as the name says, is the first step, and it involves a thorough review of records, visual inspections of the property, but there are no soil, air, or water samples typically collected at this time. Now, these assessments are done by a company that does site assessments, and they do cost money. They're something that in doing a purchase, it is something that really, unless you have a good reason not to, should at least be looked at every purchase. If there's absolutely no question of any prior contamination and the intended purpose or lease out of this building is not going to be any businesses that will require a clean bill of health on the building, as long as there's no potential problems, then you may not even need a phase one, or a phase one may be enough. Now, if there are problems or questions of any sort that come into the phase one, then you go to a phase two environmental site assessment. And this involves actual physical sampling of soil, groundwater, digging materials to analyze for contaminants. Now, sometimes you can get away with them not being super expensive, depending on the property and whether you can get to it. If this is a ground-up development and you've got bare ground, it's a lot easier to come in and scoop up dirt or dig holes or wells to sample things. But if you have a building that's already on the site, sometimes there may be some destructive testing to get these done. And the phase two tends to be much more expensive. And once in a while, you'll even have sellers who will battle and may not even approve. And they may, depending on the nature of the contract and what lets either party out, if they don't want that phase two done, and I've seen this just once before, they didn't want to have a formal phase two that the property failed. Now, final consideration here when we're looking at environmental site assessments and certifications is that this can actually be a value add play. And I've seen this one time where there was a site that was in an area that was of high value, but had been passed on by multiple people because there were environmental issues. And somebody came along and actually pushed through the environmental site assessments. They got it at a decreased valuation, got the environmental stuff done, and then were able to sell it. And so it was a really good deal from a value standpoint. The downside of those is you're going to have to spend some money to try and get that done. And if it turns out to be enough contamination that it needs remediation, which can be things like on the high end, a federal Superfund site, then that can be a really big deal. Sometimes there's a value add play there if it's not too in depth. So other environmental certifications, and it was funny, I just saw this. I didn't even think about it when I was talking about environmental stuff, because that's usually what people who are actively investing are talking about if they're talking about an environmental assessment. But if you are in some markets, and probably in California, it's a big deal, there are environmental certifications that are more about being environmentally friendly. One is called LEED, L-E-E-D, which stands for Leadership, Energy, and Environmental Design. This is a certification of a building showing that the building has met certain standards for sustainability and efficient use of resources, such as water, energy, air quality, and environmentally preferable materials. Depending on the market, sometimes you can draw higher rents for a LEED certified building. If it's something that there's enough tenants want to have that either as just part of the way they operate their business or something that they want to promote to their employees and their customers. Energy Star certification is a similar thing. This certification shows that buildings use less energy, are less expensive to operate, and cause fewer greenhouse gas emissions than their peers. And a final one is BREEAM, or which is B-R-E-E-A-M, Building Research Establishment Environmental Assessment Method. And this is one that I hadn't seen this one before until a researcher came upon it. But same thing, sustainability assessment for infrastructure and the quality of the buildings and how long they will last. If you see those types of things are more for niche markets where you're going to have more concern about environmental factors. Typically, if you're talking about an industrial building, especially, these environmental site assessments are the things that will be talked about if somebody is talking about needing an environmental assessment or certification. All right, so we're going to cut that off there. This again was just diving into a little bit of due diligence and some of the things that operators and maybe looking at and maybe talking about to investors, just so you got that extra stuff that you know about, you can ask questions about and know what they're talking about. So thank you for joining us on this edition of the Surgeon Syndicate, and join us again soon.
We'll get back to our show in a minute, but first I want to offer you an opportunity to accelerate your learning. My life changed and my ability to start becoming work optional changed when I gained the people and the knowledge to start investing in commercial real estate. One of the key people there was Ash Patel, and joining his Invest Beyond Multifamily Mastermind. With that, I had the people and the knowledge. Well, that mastermind is no longer open, but for a fraction of the price, Ash has now made a course. And this is probably the most valuable set of information and quickest way to move along your learning curve. So if you are interested in actively investing in commercial real estate, in retail, in industrial, in office, I would recommend this course to you. We're going to include a pre-sale link both in the show notes. It'll also be on the surgeonsyndicate.com website. And in your checkout, we'll save you another 1%. I know it's not a lot, but every little bit helps if you use the discount code MIKE1487. So take that step now and move your future forward. If you're not interested in investing actively, give us a call here at Fortress Capital and let's talk about what your goals are as a passive investor. But it's time to stop listening, start acting, and let's move your future forward.
This has been an episode of Surgeon Syndicate. If you found value in this episode, know other surgeons are hungry to become job optional. You can help them by sharing this content today. I also want to serve you better, so I want to offer you two things. Number one, I'll be able to give you the content in an even better way if you can take a moment and leave an honest review of the show explaining what you like and what you don't. Number two, if you are a surgeon and serious about this, you don't want to do this on your own because you don't want to make mistakes with your money, I'd be happy to help. Schedule a call. We can make a plan. Looking forward to having you with me on the next episode.